With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This September series of podcasts is sponsored by Sweetwater, who, for the month of September, are rolling out incredible exclusives. Like Fender Custom Shop GT11 Strats and Tellys and the Walrus Deep 6 Voyager Combo Pedal, plus major deals on coveted gear like the Way Huge Javelina Fuzz at a super low price while supplies last. And that's not all. September is Guitar Month and it's absolutely packed with mind-blowing giveaways, 48-month interest-free financing on many great brands and plenty of price drops, instant rebates and limited-time offers that you won't want to miss out on. Did I mention that Sweetwater is now a Guinness World Record title holder? To find out more, go to sweetwater.com, stop by their YouTube, or listen to the rest of this podcast series. Hello and welcome to the Friday special podcast series, a podcast by Guitar Nerds, hosted by me, Joe Branton, and the resident Guitar Nerds pedal expert, Matt Knight.
Hello there.
Every week on this podcast series, our lineup will include a guest from the world of effects pedals, and this week we are lucky enough to have Brian Wampler from Wampler Pedals and the Chasing Tone podcast here with us on the show. Hello, Brian.
Hey, guys.
Hello, thanks. See, Joe, much for joining us. Yeah,
you introduced me as the resident pedal nerd, but to be honest, on these ones, it's definitely not going to be the case.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's true. I mean,
I may have worked in stores and, you know, we can kind of fluff our way around it, but we're with a man who actually builds them for a living, so I think his knowledge is probably somewhat superior to mine. Yeah,
I wouldn't give me that much credit.
Yeah, that's fair. In fact, you know, the Friday series is normally supposed to be just me, but I have to have you here because I realize how much I'm going to be completely out of my depth if I don't have someone who knows at least something about weird effects pedals.
Actually, before we get into the main thing, that actually leads me to just one quick interesting question for Brian. How much time do you actually get to, like, either one, go in a music store, or two, try other people's, like, pedals? Does it take up a large portion of your day, or do you find yourself, like, super ingrained in what you're doing most of the time?
I wish I could do more things like that. That's actually one of the things that I really want to do more of this next year, is go to music stores and see what's out there. I mean, I do get to play some stuff sometimes, but it's usually if it's a pedal that I see someone talking about and I buy it. I don't really get a lot of people just sending me random pedals or anything. I think Josh Scott holds the record on the most pedals from, you know, as far as being a pedal builder. Yeah. He seems like he has one of everything. So I get to play some stuff, but not as much as what you'd think. Most of the stuff that I play is things that I'm either working on or have built or, you know, a common question people ask me is, what's your favorite Wampler pedal? And I honestly feel like I'm so burned out on them. That's all I play all the time. I want something else to play sometimes.
Yeah.
So. I'm just going to delete that question from our list of questions, by the way.
Well, that's always the interesting thing, isn't it? It's, you know, the boss engineers always say the same thing. It's like, what's your favorite one? Well, the one we just released.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of, you know, you're always in it and you're always working on it. But we're the same. Like, I very rarely get down to Brighton to see the other guys, and we don't really get into music stores as much as we did. I mean, we've all worked in them, but it's, you know, sometimes the rest of life takes over and you're just like, oh, I just have to stick with what I've got. But yeah, it's difficult because there's so much out there, I guess.
Yeah, I'm in an area where there's not a lot of music stores. Sweetwater is probably, I mean, it's a big store, but it's 3 hours away, so it's not really much, you know, it's not a drive. Not without staying all night, pretty much.
That's a big old effort, 3 hours. I think of it as being tough to get a sort of a 25-minute train into Brighton to go to GAC. So, yeah, that's 3 hours is a big old chunk.
But, yeah, I'm guessing, leading on from what you say, you know, not trying much stuff, that sort of feeds into what this podcast is going to be about then.
Joe. Yeah, yeah, I should do that, shouldn't I? So this podcast series is sponsored by Sweetwater, and there's a very good reason for that. It's September, which means it's Guitar Month, which actually I had no idea that September was Guitar Month, you know, despite having been doing this for 6 years or whatever. And anyway, this year Sweetwater have taken Guitar Month very seriously indeed. You've probably, listener, seen on YouTube or heard it on Chasing Tone podcast, they've gone after the Guinness World Record for the largest functional pedal board featuring over 300 pedals, 319.
I think it was 319
individual. Yeah. Stomp boxes. Yeah, 319. So you know, and they got loads of people involved from the FX pedal world. So of course, who better to talk to about what a ridiculous undertaking than Brian Wampler, who along with Josh from JHS Pedals, Robert Keeley from Keeley Electronics, and then there was Ryan Dick from Temple Pedal Boards. So you actually got to be there to create this ridiculous board and try and make the entire thing functional.
Yeah.
Which seems ridiculous. 319 pedals is obviously a lot, and there have been other people that have tried this sort of thing. I did one. I made it to 150. I had loads of duplicates. There were loads of duplicates. I put a video up on YouTube about it. It was good, but it was just white noise. And to be honest, by the time I'd plugged in and powered 150 pedals and been electrocuted more times than I cared about, I couldn't be bothered to go back round them and try and, you know, manipulate all the controls to make it actually sound usable. So I ended up just playing some white noise and then just leaving it at that. Of course, Nick Reinhardt and One Orderette have gone after the record as well. I can't remember what they made it to. I think they did
slightly less than you when you did one when you were working at GAK.
Yeah.
And actually, when I lived in Brighton and I went to BIM, the music college, they actually attempted it as well. Like, and this was like 10 years ago, and I think it was like 100 or something like that. So
yeah, yeah.
Certainly, I think 319 is
somewhere
a lot.
In Germany. Was it? Was it music? What's the one that's not Thomann? Music store. I think they did it. I think they made it to like 200 and something. Although, according to the Sweetwater video, the record before this was 140 something.
I think official Guinness record, yeah, in 2008. And I was part of that one too, actually.
Oh, but, really? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Who hosted that one?
A guy named Joe King and Aljon Go.
Okay.
So,
right.
And yeah, I don't know if you may know Aljon. He's worked for Gibson and several others in the music industry. But yeah, it was not as organized and put together as what Sweetwater. I mean,
this one feels way more official.
Sweetwater is, they have a process for everything in a good way. So like everything was dictated. We had a theater. We had a very special theater that was all ours, dedicated lighting, coffee. It was going to happen from this time to that time for these days. Like, everything was scheduled out. We had everything we needed right there. Like, here's your pedals, here's your cables, here's your power supplies. You know, like, everything was just ready to go. The first time, it was very much, I've got three pedals. Well, I've got four. Well, bring your three and I'll, you know, bring some cables. We might need some extras. It was one of those type of deals. So still both fun. It took place at a bar in Nashville, Tennessee. So the later in the evening it got, the funner it got. But it was just a different experience all the way around. Both were fun, yeah. But you know, honestly, experience wise, I would say the Sweetwater thing by a mile, just because, you know, you had Matt Scallon there. You had
of course.
You had I guess things have changed a lot in the pedal world.
I'm sorry.
I said, I guess things have changed a lot in the pedal world in the last, well, since 2008, you know, in the last sort of 10, 11 years. Like, there's way more pedals out there now.
Oh, it's a completely different landscape. Yeah, it's entirely different.
Yeah.
Even I was looking at pictures from back then, and just the pedals that were on the boards, it's just a totally different market than it was.
I mean, 2008 was like the would have been right at the start of boutique pedals even becoming kind of a popular thing.
Yeah,
it must have been like a 90% Boss and Electro Harmonix board at that sort of time.
Pretty much, yeah. There was a lot of Boss, a lot of Electro Harmonix. Of course, I was able to get a few of my things on there. There was a lot of Visual Sound. TC Electronics had quite a few things on there. I can't remember who else now off the top of my head, but yeah, it was in the pedal world, 10 or 11 years is like it's like a century.
Yeah,
the rest of the world, like, it seems like the pedal world changes dramatically about every 6 months. It's like everything changes completely. From even to, like, we look at, like, Helix stuff. I mean, the Helix and the Fractals, like, popularity, that's pretty new in reality, but to us in the pedal world, that feels like that stuff's been around forever.
Yeah, you're right in that it feels like it's a really short time since I think people have been taking it seriously, and especially, like, if you want to talk about that sort of digital side of effects pedals, I think it was something that was welcomed by metal or any sort of heavier music that requires everything to be very clean and isn't so dependent on anything vintage or classic sounding. But it's totally new that now we're having more traditional players adopt digital gear because the replication of that old gear is now at the moment, it's pretty good, or at least we all think it's pretty good. I still don't know if in 10 years it's going to be that thing that happened with rack gear in the 80s where we look back at it and we're like, wow, that is, I don't know what we were doing. But
it's funny. And I'm sure when Josh gets on here, he can probably elaborate more. But the gear industry is very cyclical. So you can kind of look back through history and see, like, trends like that. Like you said, rack was one era. I honestly believe that this is another era. I am seeing a lot of people who, not that they're looking at the Helixes and the Fractals and the Kempers and thinking that it sucks, but they are thinking, well, I need just a few pedals. And then they'll say, well, now I need just a few more pedals. Then next thing you know, now they have another guitar rig and their Kemper. So it's, definitely, like, I did see, it looked like pedals were kind of not as popular as I would like. I would feel comfortable with them being for a little bit. And it does seem like it's kind of swinging back around a little bit. So that's
really,
that's good.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, it definitely felt like, I feel like 2 years ago was the time that was like the Boss ES8 came out. Switches were in the absolute most popular things, which meant you would have lots of pedals to use with the switches. Switches were more accessible at a price point, meaning that bigger boards were more of an option for more players. And definitely since then, certainly in the music and the bands that I deal with, I'm seeing a lot of people move from switches to digital versions of gear, but it'll be interesting to see if it swings back again over the next few years.
With the data I see, I'm seeing that sort of thing. I mean, it really feels, to be honest with you, I don't see it. I see it kind of changing in this way. We all listen to music, right? Of course we do, or we wouldn't play guitar. You have, like, Spotify, which you could find any song you want pretty much. But you see, and you have been seeing, people, buying vinyl, listening to vinyl, like, that's, it feels more analog, right? It feels something more, I don't know what the right word is, but it just feels like it's a little more real and alive than pulling up Spotify and listening to a song. I mean, yeah, Spotify is super handy when you want to listen to something, but when you, want to have a drink or maybe have a little smoke or something like that, whatever you do, and you want to listen to music, you know, if you got a vinyl collection, you're going to pull that up. And to me, that's like a good pedal, whether it's analog or digital, a great pedal. You can turn the knobs on and get a sound, and it feels organic. You know, it doesn't feel like you're, you know, turning a knob on your MacBook. It just feels real and tangible. And to me, like that's what it feels like. It's that difference.
I guess it's always that sort of. We've all tried loads of pedals, and there's always pedals that you try and go, this is great. Sounds great. It's enjoyable. And I'd stick it on a pedal board, but there's always certain pedals that when you plug them in, you just get sucked in like instantly. And then you know that that's like special because like you say, it's a totally different experience. It feels so much more hands-on. It feels like you're so much more into what you're doing. Rather than putting up a plugin and going through monitors, which to me has always felt relatively cold, but I've maybe just not found the right sound that, you know, works, I guess.
I know several big name artists who use, you know, a Fractal or a Kemper or a Helix, and it's always a convenience thing. And even me, like, I was playing my Plexi last night, just cranked, like, everything on 10, everything dimed. And it's a totally, total different world experience than it is playing the digital version of that. Yeah, you can get the sound in your DAW. Yeah, you can get the sound out front. But it's a world of difference when that amp is in the room and it's cranked. And it's moving every hair on your body. it's a religious experience at that point. And it's... You can get the sound of it with digital, but you can't replicate the experience, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's rare to get to hear anything turned up full in any situation these days. Oh, who is the fellow who used to come into GAC, Matt?
Gary Moore.
Yeah.
That fella.
Yeah. That one, dude.
You know that guy. No one really knows him. But it's always the thing, you know, his sound was just turning everything up, and, you know, he was the only guy that we would never tell to turn down.
Yeah, whenever he came into the guitar shop, he'd want to put everything on full and would practically have to ask all the other customers to leave so that he could...
But I mean, you know, just before we maybe go into this kind of pedal board again, I mean, is that... what you just said there, is that your way of like approaching a new build when you sit down at like a breadboard for the first time? You know you're onto something when it just feels good to play.
It's always an emotional thing. If I don't have an emotional connection, and this sounds so stupid in regards to electronics because it's math, but in reality, if I don't have any sort of emotional connection as a player with what I'm building, I kind of think it's shit. I really do, and I'll just stop doing it.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you know, if it all boils down to playing and feeling that organic experience with that whatever circuit I'm working on, which honestly, that's probably why I love overdrives and distortions and fuzzes so much, is because that does feel so much more tangible than a chorus. And don't get me wrong, like I love the modulation stuff when we're coming out with a Terraform. I keep saying we're going to, but it literally is going to happen here in a month or two. And that stuff's great, but man, my, you know, home base for me really is a good dirt, whether it's a cranked amp, whether it's a pedal into an amp, you know, or a pedal into a cranked amp, but it's just a clipping circuit of some sort is that's what I call home, you know?
Yeah, so you've got 15 different drive pedals in your range right now. So,
yeah,
that's I guess that's, you definitely feel the love for that more than anything else.
Yeah, if I had my choice, you know, and I didn't have to worry about what, you know, the retailers wanted to see from us or what customers wanted to see, then I probably would have about, you know, 200 or 300 different overdrives and distortions and buzzes. I mean, seriously, like that's, I have folders and folders full of schematics that I've, you know, where I've created a circuit and drawn out the schematic and just thought, that's a good sounding, you know, circuit. We'll put that away for later.
do you have a single amplifier that you breadboard all your drives through? Is there an amp that you design that drives around in particular?
Three of them. I always start out with AC-15, Fender Hot Rod Deluxe, or a Deluxe Reverb sometimes, but kind of for breadboarding purposes, excuse me, I think the Hot Rod Deluxe is not.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Forgiving in a good way. So I think it'll kind of tell you whether something's cool or not. And then Marshall.
Right.
And I think you got to have, to me, like those are like the three types of amps that everything else is a derivative from in some way.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, yeah, that sounds like you're hitting all major bases for your sort of standard vintage-ish amps.
I do have a bunch of other amps that, you know, as it's progressing, I'll plug in and say, okay, what's it sound like through this Mesa Boogie Lone Star? You know, what's it sound like to this PV Classic 30? So, you know, I still want to make sure it's working with all those amps. But, when I start out, it's basically the three food groups, the Marshall, Box, and Fender.
Well, I guess the thing is, if you stray too far, you start, I'm just going to design this pedal through my sort of Dumble Overdrive Special, you're sort of really tailoring it. I mean, you have to obviously love the pedal yourself, but at the same time, you've got to think about 90% of your customer base that's actually going to go home and plug it into a Marshall or a Fender or a Vox.
That's exactly what you got to think, yeah. And the thing is, especially if you're the type of person that is really into like building your own stuff, whether it's pedals or whatever, I think you have a tendency to, generally, if you build pedals, you also build amps. So I've seen a lot of people have a tendency to use their home-built amp while they're creating something. And while I get it, like, that's fun and cool, but nobody else has that amp, you know? So yeah. maybe that pedal sounds great through that, you know, that home-built amp, but it might sound like complete ass through, you know, your Hot Rod Deluxe or your Blue Junior.
Wait, actually, this made me think of a question when I was on my way back. I mean, have you ever, I mean, obviously you love everything that you put out. Obviously you wouldn't put your name on it if you didn't like it. But have you ever tweaked something in a way that you wouldn't necessarily do, but it's for the kind of greater good in some ways? You'd be like, oh, maybe I wouldn't use it like that, but I know that I'm maybe a little bit more sort of specialist in my thinking, and I just need to do this to make it more appropriate for the rest of my audience.
Yeah, I mean, let me think off the top of my head. You know, we came out with a pedal called the Triple Rec several years ago, and I had a circuit that would it added a boost, but it would allow you to tweak it from kind of a crunchy boost to making it more of a fuzz. I did that really because I hadn't really seen anything that did that, and I thought it might be fun, kind of cool. It ended up not really resonating with people, I don't think, very well, which is really odd because that when you added that as the fuzz pedal, that kind of became the Leviathan fuzz, which seems to be liked by a lot of guys playing Doom and, you know, sludgy type stuff. Yeah, I mean, really, it's a different kind of buzz. That's what you want. Totally. It's not a big muff. It's not a. It just is what it is. I mean, it's not a derivative of anything else. I don't like. I'm not a big fan of adding something that's ridiculously useless just because you can. You know, like I remember. I actually thought about one time taking a tube screamer, and for every resistor in the signal path, making it a potentiometer, a knob. And that, like, that's not very useful to the majority of people, but it's fun if you're a dork like me and you just like turning knobs and seeing what happens. So I mean, there's those sort of things.
But I just want to be able to tweak every single.
Yeah, like I love that sort of thing. For me, it's kind of a struggle to get pedals down to a minimum number of knobs because I love having the ability to tweak things, but. As long as it's functional, you know. So I guess that's a really roundabout and very off-topic way of answering your question of saying I can't really think of anything that we do where I'm adding something that's not useful.
Well, that's good. That's an excellent. That's an excellent place to be. I'd rather be there than having to modify pedals for the general public. I'm not sure I agree with most things that the general public like. I'd rather make pedals that are just a little bit weird.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I guess you've got to start somewhere.
you know, the making pedals for a living is radically different than making them for yourself. I remember, I think it's like DIY, not DIY stomp boxes. Maybe it's freestompboxes.com or org or one of those DIY sites. I've seen several people talk about, you know, I've been building my pedals. I'm thinking about starting a pedal business. And then a few months later is I can't sell my pedals. And the answer is always the same. Like it's one thing building pedals. It's a whole different thing selling pedals. Because at the end of the day, I mean, if you're selling pedals, it's a lot like writing. It really is a lot like writing music for people to digest. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe you're the Foo Fighters. And you have this type of music that you like to listen to when you're in your car and you're driving down the road. But that's not necessarily the same thing that people want to hear you play when they go watch you live. You know, I mean, think of the most famous band you can think of that's been around for some time. And more than likely, whenever you see them, you want to hear their hits that they were, you know, their hits that they did 20 years ago that was great. But let me think of an example. Okay, so Aerosmith, for example. I bet you, and I haven't asked anyone in Aerosmith, but I'm betting you that whenever they play their classics like Dream On or Walk This Way, they probably could literally fall asleep and still play it. Like it's not, you know, they're just like, they don't get in the car and put that song in on the radio. That's not what they want to listen to, you know, but that's what everyone else wants to hear when they go see Aerosmith. So the pedal game is a lot like that. I mean, if you look at like the Klon circuit, for example, the Tube Screamer circuit, those classic circuits, you see a lot of companies that come out with a Tube Screamer type thing or, you know, a fuzz bass.
Everyone does
thing.
A Tube Screamer. Yeah.
But I mean, it's a lot of the times, like even the Tumnus came about, which is based on that Klon circuit. That came about because I was getting hammered with people asking us to do that. And I was like,
really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Just email after email after email. And I'm like, man, I really like that's I would rather do my own thing. Like I would rather make my own thing. But we exist to serve people. We exist to serve customers who want specific tones. And if they are asking us, make this so I can buy it from you, then like that's kind of my duty. That's why I'm here. You know, if I wasn't doing that, I'd be roofing a house or something somewhere, you know, so sweeping a floor. But, so that's your job as a pedal company is to fulfill what people want you to do in regards to guitar pedals.
And
I guess a lot of that has sort of had to come, you've had to sort of learn that along the way, because obviously you can learn to build a circuit, but to build a successful company is obviously, and all of the things, because you've, I can't remember when, but it was only a few years ago, the whole kind of range went through a total redesign, right, in terms of the looks and the graphics and everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It went from sort of one style to another, and I'm guessing that was a decision to kind of, yeah, really boost the company and in selling pedals rather than just, you know, making pedals.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's really like any other business. I mean, unless you're doing something new and unless you're evolving, unless you're putting out something that you didn't have out last year, you're just getting stagnant and getting ready to die.
Yeah.
As much as people don't want to admit it, I mean, that really is the truth of what drives the pedal market, is the new stuff coming out that people want, right? I mean, like, for example, we've discontinued the Triple Rec. Now, I love it when people do buy that used on, you know, on the used market. I mean, it's awesome that people love it. But if my entire ability to live and feed my family depended on that, I'd have to find another job, because, you know, you can't buy it from us.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can only buy it on the used market, and that's great. But in order for me to feed my family, we got to come out with something new that people want, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's definitely fun. And it definitely is something that I'm passionate about, but it's something that, like, it's like making a record. You got to be mindful of what people want you to do. So as much as I want to put out that tube skimmer that has 45 knobs, it's probably not going to be out.
No, I'm totally one day. Down with that. Yeah. Yeah. Now we should talk, a little bit more about the Sweetwater event, because we're actually, believe it or not, sure, guys, we're coming up for time on this podcast already. But I wanted to talk about,
I do have,
like,
a tendency to ramble. Sorry.
No. That's the making of a good podcast, is a ramble. But I wanted to talk about, like, the pre-planning that went into, sure, that went into this. Because I assume, obviously, Sweetwater, they, you know, they hired the, you know, the venue, they made sure you guys all had your pedals and everything. But it was essentially the four of you that had to build the boards, work out how to put everything together, decide what order everything ran in, if any. And of course, it was made up of whatever it was, 32 mini boards.
32.
Yeah. How did you guys sit down and go about? Yeah, 34, something like that. Yeah. How did you guys, like, go about actually sitting down and working out how you were going to do this? Because everything seemed very organized.
Oh, it was extremely organized. Honestly, Sweetwater did a lot of the heavy lifting. I mean, they had all the pedals that we were going to use, they were on a table. All the cables that we were going to need, they were in nice, neat boxes, ready to go, you know, brand new. Same thing with power supplies, the pedal boards, like, everything was like, all right, guys, here's everything you need. Here's some coffee. Let us know what we can do to help. So we, right, you know, okay, we sat around, okay, for a good majority of the time thinking, all right, so 300 and some pedals, where do we start? Do we organize them by brand? Do we organize them by type? Do we go by color? Like, what, you know, what, how do we do this? And we decided, all right, well, let's take all the, you know, all the tuners, put them all together, all the overdrives, put them all together, all the distortion, you know, so on and so forth. And so what you end up having, when you, you know, because that we call it one big pedal board, but in reality, it was like you said, 30 some little, you know, temple boards stuck together. So what that meant is that all those individual boards, you know, you're going to get somebody somewhere has a board with nothing but tuners. Because, you know, they're doing giveaways for this stuff. They've already
they
given
are,
a few
yeah,
away.
They're giving it all away. I yeah. assumed that each yeah. of the pedal boards was maybe like a pedal board on its own. Like, you know, it'd have a tuner, a drive, a delay, a reverb, that sort of thing. But
no.
Some
somebody,
poor person is going to yeah. win like 12 tuner pedals.
Yes.
Oh, that's so great.
Yes. Somebody has a board full of compressors. Somebody has a board full of, you know, full of whammies and wahs. Oh. I think there's two wah boards, you know. Oh, hopefully, wow. Kirk Hammett got that one, but so yeah, it's, you yeah, know, that's, the cool stuff is, I mean, it's all cool, but I would have really liked to have like one of the delay boards, you know.
Yeah, that's about the only one that would have kind of worked, I guess, on its mm-hmm. own.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I take all the overdrives and distortions, but I have some delays, but there's some really good ones that were on that one that were just so fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. How many Wampler pedals were actually on the board? Did you get one of everything on there?
I think we had one of everything, if I recall right.
So yeah. for 319 pedals, you obviously had to use other brands outside of the three pedal builders that were there. Was it just all the standards? Did you just go for all the mainstream standards? Were there any other like boutique brands that made a sort of substantial appearance on the board?
Well, Sweetwater picked out the pedals that would be on there, and it had it. So they were products.
Oh, really? Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it was. It was brands that sell through Sweetwater,
right?
But I'm not for sure like how they decided which pedals from which brand were going to be on there or not. I really honestly don't know. Like I said, when we showed up, there was just a table full of boxes of pedals, like literally stacked up. So, as far as other brands, I mean, of course you had JHS and Earthquaker and TC Electronics and MXR and Boss and Keeley stuff, like everybody you would expect to be on there.
I can't recall
exactly what like smallest brand that was on there. I'm not sure.
One of the interesting things that you were talking about this board was how to deal with signal degradation, because it was something like two American football pitches worth of cable that you were running through there, and there's of course only so much that a buffer can do to keep that signal going. So did you work out the maths of what it was actually running through, how much signal was actually getting through?
You know, I didn't, but Robert Keeley did, because he's the real engineer of the bunch. All of us are hacks. So yeah, he had it down to like how much amperage it was using, what kind of loss it was. Like he had stats on everything. It was awesome.
Of course,
and we played it. We're like, wow, this kind of sounds shitty. but I mean, you would expect that if you're going through all that cabling and who knows how many buffers. I mean, I really don't even know. But and each buffer, you're going to lose a little bit of signal. You're going to add a little bit of noise. Multiply that by 60, and it's ridiculous. So it's not as bad. Honestly, it's not as bad and as noisy as I thought it was going to be whenever it was turned off. But it's definitely not what I'd want to record an album with.
Yeah.
Now, Sweetwater, actually, as we mentioned, Sweetwater are giving you the opportunity to win one of the 30-odd boards that Brian and the guys built for the world record. And all you've got to do to win one is go to sweetwater.com/giveaway. And one of those boards could be yours. They're doing that by the end of September. And guys, that pretty much brings us up at time on this week's episode of the Friday special of Guitar Nerds. Thanks very much for listening, and thank you very much, Brian, for coming on the podcast with us this week. Obviously, we've both been running podcasts for years, and it's really nice to actually get to podcast with you.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I was
going to say, it'd be really nice to get you on a full episode to maybe just geek out a little bit more just about Wampler and pedal building and talk about the early days, as I was saying before we started, obviously. Not many people know that you wrote a book, right? So way back in the kind of early days of people getting in. Yeah. That I just looked is going for £60 on Amazon UK. So...
It was really like stupid expensive at one time, and I would tell people, don't buy it for that price. Like, don't do that. It's not worth that.
but we'll absolutely get Brian onto a full episode, because I know there's so much more we could geek out about, and I think we've barely scratched the surface. But thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Brian.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem at all. And listener, you can, of course, check out Wampler Pedals at wamplerpedals.com and the Chasing Tone podcast on all good podcast streaming services. You can join us on social media and on Patreon by searching Guitar Nerds. And we'll be back next Friday with the legend Robert Keeley, and next Wednesday with the regular episode and for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers.